True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Outfield tiers, let's go. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Thursday, January 20th. I am Frank Sample Jr., joined by Scott White Jr. No Chris Towers today as he's out dominating the flag football gridiron. What's going on, Scotty? You ready to talk some outfielders?
Yeah, let's do it. Nice big position with some nice meaty tiers. It's going to be a mouthful for you, Frank. It's going to be an earful for the listeners out there, but by the end of it, everyone will be full. So that can't be a bad thing.
It cannot be a bad thing. I agree. It's a very interesting position. A lot of elite talent up top, but I'm not sure how deep it is in terms of that elite level talent. It's an interesting position. We'll get into all of it, but yeah, how many times this offseason are we going to talk about Cody Bellinger and Christian Yelich? They are two very polarizing players and two that we will get into today. So we've got outfield tiers coming your way and going to try to get to a few emails. We're bringing it back. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. So if you have a question, you can send it there and we will get to it. All right, Scott, outfield word association. You know how this works. Go.
Big? Yeah.
All right.
It's a big position.
It is a big position. You are correct.
There's a lot going on. There's not just a large number of players, but you'll find all types of players in the outfield. And so, you know, it's never a position that I tend to make a priority early in drafts because it never really runs out of what you need. You know, it's kind of like a superstore as opposed to this mom and pop shop along the infield. Like, they're going to have it. Well, I don't know. These days they might not have it, but putting that aside, they're going to have it. And so you can always, you know, you need some stolen bases, you need some power. You just need an upsidey type with a mid to late round pick. You can pretty much always find it in the outfield.
Yeah, I think that is definitely fair. And before we actually get into the tiers, I think maybe we just talk about the position in a head-to-head points league versus a roto league. Typically, in the points format, we play with three outfielders. I think a lot of head-to-head categories leagues use three outfielders as well. And in the traditional 5x5 roto, we start five outfielders, Scott. So when drafting in those different formats, are you cognizant of maybe not filling out your outfield too quickly in a points league versus maybe putting more emphasis on it in a roto style lineup setting?
Yeah, I would say I almost intentionally avoid outfield early in only a three outfielder league, particularly if there's just one utility spot to fill. It's so frustrating if you fill those three outfield spots early, and then that seems like that's where all the value hitters are, you know, later on in the draft, and you can't do anything about it. You could use up a bench spot on them, but you have greater needs because obviously you didn't invest early in other areas. So I just find that extremely frustrating. And it's not uncommon in like a 12-team head-to-head points league for me to kind of just spend the first couple months of the season swapping out outfielders on the waiver wire before eventually landing on three that are pretty good. I want to say, was it in the podcast league last year? Brian Reynolds. I ended up with Brian Reynolds and like maybe Hunter Renfroe, who had a career season, obviously. And these weren't people that in shallow leagues like that were on anybody's radar on draft day. But there are always those types that emerge at that position. So yeah, in three outfielder leagues, look, I'm not saying I'd pass up Juan Soto with the number one overall pick, but you know, if two of my first four picks are outfielders, that's not ideal. And I'm probably putting off drafting that third one for a long, long time.
All right. I am looking at your head-to-head points league from last season. You did have Brian Reynolds. You also had Eloy Jimenez, who I would imagine you either picked up or stashed.
Yeah, somebody dropped. Yeah.
Same thing with Luis Robert, potentially. And
somebody dropped both of them when they got hurt. Those were long-term injuries, obviously.
And Robbie Grossman in your utility spot, who went 20-20 last year. And I was pretty surprised when I look back to see that he actually met that threshold, 20 homers and 20 steals for one Robbie Grossman. And you answered the first question I was going to ask, Scott, because you talked about how in a three outfielder league, you might intentionally avoid the position, but also don't just like pass up on Juan Soto because he's amazing.
Right.
And I think we could say the same things about like Bryce Harper and all those other elite outfielders as well.
Yeah, there's really no sound like Heath Cummings here. Remember the Heath Cummings nips strategy, no intentional position strategy.
Great strategy.
Oh yeah. With those basically first couple rounds, that position is just whatever. Like I'm not really drafting anybody because of their position. I know we talked about Jose Ramirez and when we did the corner infield tiers, you know, he gets elevated a little because of his position but that's already baked into the rankings. So I'm not even really thinking about position until, you know, maybe round three, more realistically, probably round four or five.
All right, so let's jump into this, the elite outfield tier, and all of these players are going inside of the first two rounds, and it includes Fernando Tatis, who will have outfield and shortstop eligibility with an ADP of 1.3. All ADP comes via Fantasy Pros. Juan Soto at pick 2.7, Bryce Harper at 8.7, Mike Trout 12.3, Mookie Betts 13.7, Kyle Tucker 13.3, Ronald Acuna 11.7, and Luis Robert at pick 22. We know Tatis and Juan Soto are amazing. Scott, I think people might be a little surprised to see Bryce Harper this high, even though he won the National League MVP and he was awesome last year. He's going ahead of, you know, names that for years he was going behind. Trout, Betts, Ronald Acuna because of injury, obviously. But what do you think? Is this warranted, Bryce Harper being, you know, a top 10 pick in 2022?
Oh, you just read off my tiers, right? So obviously.
Correct.
Obviously, I think it's warranted. But I'll tell you why I think it's warranted. And that's because remember how during the pandemic shortened 2020 season, we were saying, wow, if you look at Bryce Harper's expected stats on StatCast, what the batted ball data, the kind of stat line it says he should have put up, it was better than even his MVP winning season in 2015, right? That was something we kept saying.
Yep.
Well, he did it again last year. And oh yeah, he won a second MVP. So 2 years in a row of him delivering numbers that for a while there, I wasn't sure he was ever going to get back to. I was, you know, there were some years there where the strikeouts were rising and obviously he was having trouble staying on the field. And I wasn't sure we'd ever see him perform at an MVP level again. And now he's done it, you know, at least as far as the underlying numbers are concerned, he's looked even better 2 years in a row. And he's, you know, gotten some steals back. He's become a little bit of a stolen base contributor again when that was a little more inconsistent earlier in his career. 13 steals last year. He had 8 in 58 games the year before. So that's, you know, like on pace for more than 20. So, yeah, I mean, he's the second best on-base threat in baseball at this point, probably behind Juan Soto, in addition to having easy 35 homer power, the steals contributions, and just, it just seems like altogether a first-round pick.
I'm with you 100%, regardless of format too. We know in points leagues, he's amazing because he walks a ton. And then in Roto, I mean, he basically gives you everything. Over 300 batting average last year. And you mentioned the expected stats 2 years in a row where he has had at least a 297 expected batting average. Gives you power, runs, RBI. And now three of his last three full seasons, he's given you 13 plus steals. So I'm with you 100%. Top 10 pick, regardless of format, is Bryce Harper. Scott, I feel like one of the more confusing things, if you have a later first round pick this year, early second round pick, is trying to sort through this group of Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Kyle Tucker, and Ronald Acuna. They are all going in the same range. Pick 12, 13, the ADP for all four of these guys right there. So you've got a pretty tough decision to make. Maybe you want to pair them with a pitcher, whatever it might be. But regardless, you still have to decide which one of those four outfielders you want. How do you sort through that group?
Well, I think Acuna is definitely at last in that group. And I may be on the lower end of where I rank him now after starting on the higher end. My belief being we're not going to see him until May. And that's highly concerning to me, because if we're not going to see him take the field at all in spring training when we're drafting, who's to say how close he is to returning, really? I mean, all we have to go on is reports. And any kind of setback, you know, he could lose a month. And yeah, I don't want to invest a first round pick in that. I'm reluctant to even invest a second round pick in it, knowing when he's healthy, Acuna has number one overall type upside. So I think it's pretty easy to say he's last. If he does get in games this spring training, if he does get in games this spring, that might change the calculation for me. But as of now, I think Acuna is definitely last of this group. Trout, Betts, and Tucker. Of course, Tucker's coming off the best season of the three. He's also the least proven of the three. Betts had the hip injury that cost him some time and probably hindered his production as well, as he was playing through it for a while. Started to feel better late in the season and took off again. Didn't have surgery, which kind of concerns me. We were thinking he would, but he's entering his age 29 season, so still in his prime. And then Trout, we talked about him with the calf issue. If that wasn't on anybody's mind, the fact that Trout missed the final three quarters of last season with that calf injury, I'm sure he'd be a top five pick still, because year after year, I mean, it's not like the production has slipped for Trout. Stolen bases, yes, he's not a great contributor of those anymore. And obviously the value of those has been inflated so much in roto leagues that I feel like people obsess over them a little bit, and maybe it skews the value of certain players, Trout included. But I put him number one because that doesn't seem like an injury that'll have a carryover effect. And I personally don't see much reason to draft Mike Trout as long as you're willing to not get many stolen bases with your first round pick. So that's, I go Trout one, Betts two, Tucker three, and then Acuna a distant fourth.
All right. Yeah. The last time we saw Trout in a full season was 2019, 134 games. Well, we saw him last year, but he just played a part of the season. But in 2019, 134 games, 291, 45 homers, 11 steals, over 100 runs, over 100 RBI. So again, that was only in 134 games. We're not really that far removed from Mike Trout being still one of the best contributors in fantasy baseball. The last name in this tier, Scott, is Luis Robert, and there is a lot of hype around him, and rightfully so. I'm very excited about him. I think many people are very excited about him, and he only played 68 games last year. We've got to see him stay healthy. That's a big key for Luis Robert. He has yet to do that. Last year was his first full season, so but he's dealt with some injuries in the minor leagues as well. But he was great last year. 338 batting average, 13 homers, lowered the strikeout rate tremendously, raised the line drive rate. Statcast loved this guy as well. Scott, the guy's just like oozing with tools to power, speed, in the middle of a great lineup. So there's a lot to like. He just has to stay on the field.
Yep, there is. The fact that he cut his strikeout round rate down to 20.6% last year, very strong strikeout rate. And that's compared to 32.2% as a rookie. So huge improvement there. It really removes what had been my biggest concern about him is just, is he going to make enough contact to get to his tools? I don't worry about that so much anymore, because over the much larger sample in 2021, and again, it wasn't a full season sample, but still much larger than 2020, he certainly made all the contact he needs to. And I think he has top five potential. Factor in the stolen bases he's going to deliver, the home runs, and likely to hit for a good out. Not going to hit 338 again, obviously, but likely to contribute, make a positive contribution in batting averages. Expected batting average was 297. I mean, that's still really high end. So I think all of the players here, Tatis, Soto, Harper, Trout, Betts, Tucker, Acuna, Robert, they all have the potential to be top five players off the board next year, which is why they're all in the same tier, right? I very similar projected outcome for each of them. Theoretically, they could finish in any order at season's end. It's a big, there's a lot of names here, obviously. It looks like a nice big tier, but they're all so high end, they're going to be gone by the middle of round two in all likelihood. And it's not really going to give you a chance to decide, okay, is this position depleting faster than this position? You know, it's just going to be entirely driven by draft order. Probably for the elite at every tier, you're not really going to have to think about positions yet. I'm sorry. Probably for the elite at every position, you're not going to have to think about position yet, because the tiers are just going to deplete. That first tier at every position is going to deplete too quickly for you to engage in that thought process.
Let's move into the near elite tier, and this spans from round three through seven, and includes Cedric Mullins, Starling Marte, Whit Merrifield, Aaron Judge, Yordan Alvarez, Teoscar Hernandez, George Springer, Byron Buxton, and Ketel Marte, with Whit Merrifield a tier lower in points league. Scott, we recently spoke about Cedric Mullins. We did that podcast, Can the 2021 Breakouts Do It Again? I encourage everyone to go check it out if they haven't listened or watched it already. But Mullins, while he is an awesome story and I am rooting for him, it's hard for me to get behind the price, Scott. I don't know if it's like this mental block thing. It happens every year for me in fantasy, actually. Someone who was drafted so late the previous year, and this really shouldn't affect us. If you believe in the player, then you believe in the player. But you know, he was drafted outside the top 350 last year. He was a free agent pickup for a lot of people. And now Cedric Mullins is being drafted inside the top three rounds. So it is a big price tag to pay. Fell off a little bit in the second half. The StatCast numbers say he was probably played a little bit over his head. So I like the player, Scott, but I do not like the price tag for Cedric Mullins.
Yeah, I mean, that's always difficult to navigate, and it seems like I am more inclined than most evaluators to give those surprise breakthrough players the benefit of the doubt going into the next season. I almost never rank them at face value, and you know, as concerned as you are about the price tag for Cedric Mullins going in the back half of round three, or I guess technically the front half of round three, some point in round three, as worried as you are about that price tag, you know, that's not giving him full credit for the player he was last year. He was the sixth best hitter in Roto last year, the only 30-30 guy. So, you know, everybody's discounting him a little. It's just how much stock do you put in the performance? How likely do you think he is to turn back into a pumpkin? I have a lot of faith in it, because even though you mention he kind of came back to earth a little in the second half, that was really just in batting average. He had 261 in the second half, which, you know, you'll still take a 261 batting average from a 30-30 guy. 14 of those 30 home runs came in the second half. 14 of the stolen bases came in the second half. Very good pace for both of those still. And the 260 batting average that he regressed to was basically what his expected batting average was showing all season. So it was kind of a very predictable decline. And like I said, not enough to really change his high-end standing. So obviously we've talked about it the past couple of weeks, all the changes they're making to Camden Yards. It's really just in left field. And I think every single one, yeah, I got this Ray chart pulled up right now. Every single one of his home runs was, one was to straightaway center. The rest were all to right center or right field. So the changes that are happening in Camden Yards shouldn't impact Mullins at all. And for that kind of power speed combo, I think a third round pick is, you know, I'd rather invest in him than Ozzy Albies. I know Ozzy Albies is probably a safer pick, but he might only give you 2/3 of Mullins' home runs. He might only give you half of Mullins' steals. Mm.
And you call yourself a Braves fan, Scott? How dare you?
This jersey I'm wearing right now is actually an Ozzy Albies jersey. So
take it off.
Ill of the guy.
What size are you, Scott?
With his name printed on my back.
What size shirt do you wear, Scott?
Large.
Okay, so what we're going to need you to do is, after we finish the podcast, you pack that shirt up, you ship it to me, it's going to be mine now, and then I'll wear it here on the podcast.
Okay. I don't see how that works.
I mean, I don't know. You're talking
Texas Rangers cap. You ever speak ill of any Rangers while you're wearing that cap, Frankie?
Never, Scott. I mean, you know I can't quit my boy Nathaniel Lowe and Willie Calhoun with an ADP of 400 or something. Nah, it's
whatever. Yeah, how do you feel about, I don't know, who's a Rangers? How do you feel about Adolis Garcia, huh?
Don't love him. Marcus Semien, he's on the bus list. We spoke about him on yesterday's podcast. Let's move into Teoscar Hernandez, Scott. It seems like we've all done a complete 180 on Teoscar. Last year, we were worried about the price tag. I think he was going inside the top 60 or 70 picks, something like that. But the improvements, they held. We didn't know whether to trust what he did in the shortened season. Not only did they hold, but he got better. The strikeout rate, he cut it even more, hits a lot of line drives, and obviously in the middle of one of the best lineups in baseball. I think there's a chance that the batting average regresses a tad. You know, maybe the strikeouts, you know, rise back up a little bit. I don't know if he can maintain this 25% strikeout rate when we have so much data of him striking out more than that. But even if he does, if he hits 270 in the middle of that lineup with power and a little bit of speed, I think he's still going to be really good. So I don't mind. I don't mind a late third round pick on Teoscar Hernandez. How about you?
Yeah, it still feels wrong to me. And of course, Teoscar Hernandez was the bust pick I was pushing the hardest last year. I was as confident in him as anyone that I was as confident as anyone that he would come crashing back down after thriving over a very small sample in 2020, but it was mostly because of that strikeout rate and going from striking out to about a third of the time to about a quarter of the time. I mean, that's huge. The fact that he is going to contribute a useful number of steals, and you know, he's a fast runner, so I don't have a lot of concerns about him giving you steals in that 12 to 15 range again. I think that's you can bank on that happening. It still feels wrong to see him listed there between Aaron Judge and George Springer, you know, two longtime standouts in the early rounds of fantasy drafts, just mainstays there. But I think he deserves it. I agree. I can't find much to criticize him for, except, you know, obviously he doesn't have quite the track record of those other two.
Wow, you know, I'm looking into the splits for Teoscar. I wanted to see how he performed at each of the ballparks that the Blue Jays played in last year, because obviously they played in three different home parks for various reasons. And he only hit .241 with a .692 OPS in 36 games in Rogers Center. That's surprising to me. That tells me, can he be better? Is that possible? I don't know. It's just surprising that he was that bad and somewhere that's usually a pretty good park to hit in. So something that catches my eye a little bit with Teoscar Hernandez. You mentioned George Springer, Scott, and I really like the value on both Springer and Buxton. The ADP right around 57 for Springer, 65 for Buxton. I think they have as much talent as anybody in this tier. You're just getting them at a discount because of the injury risk, which I get it. It makes sense. Like, we have to bake that into their price somehow. But if they can stay healthy, I mean, there's definitely a chance that they could smash this ADP.
Yeah, Buxton especially. I mean, Buxton showed first round type potential in between his usual injuries last year. I mean, that he still hasn't cracked that nut, staying on the field for even 120 games, right? I think he's had one season where he's played that many games. One season where he's played even 100 games. Good grief.
But he played 140 that year, Scott. Come on, give the guy some credit.
That's amazing. I mean, obviously that is a big hurdle for him, but never in those other years. And you know, it goes back to age 21. He's now entering his age 28 season, but he's been around a while, and never has he, prior to last year, had he delivered first round caliber production. A 1,005 OPS, batted 306. And just the quality of contact backs up the power production, the 19 home runs in those 61 games. He's always been somebody who could contribute stolen bases. So just, you know, very similar upside outcome to like a Luis Robert, I think, who of course is a tier above this. But that extensive injury history obviously bumps down Buxton to where he is here in the near elite tier instead of the elite.
All right, let's move on to the next best things tier. And this ranges from rounds 5 through 10 and includes Eloy Jimenez, Nick Castellanos, JD Martinez, Jesse Winker, Brian Reynolds, Tyler O'Neill, Kyle Schwarber, Giancarlo Stanton, Mitch Haniger, Randy Rosarena, Chris Bryant, Cody Bellinger, and Christian Yelich. Quite a few names in this tier, and you'll learn throughout the other tiers that there's a lot of names in all these tiers. Overall, there's just a lot of outfielders to talk about. And Scott, I think we can make the argument, or at least maybe I can, that Eloy Jimenez and Nick Castellanos should be in the tier above. I know Eloy is coming off an injury-plagued season, returned from a torn pec, clearly was not himself, even when he returned after that. And Nick Castellanos is a free agent. He's been linked to the Phillies, the Miami Marlins. We'll see where he winds up. But yeah, Castellanos was great last year. And I feel like Eloy, before the injury, he was trending in the right direction. He was good as a rookie. He had over 30 home runs. He was even better in the shortened season. It seemed like he was ready for the breakout, and then he got hurt.
So I've definitely gone more to Chris's side in the Eloy Jimenez debate. I was kind of straddling the fence last year when you were very pro Eloy Jimenez. Chris was a little bit more of a pessimist. I think Chris did technically have Eloy Jimenez in his bust column, but not so much that he was making a case for him to be a bust, just that he would be kind of an average power hitter. You know, kind of what Nolan Arenado has become with the Cardinals. And I think the data we got on Eloy Jimenez last year, and really the data we've seen throughout his career at this point, points to him being more of that. He's young enough that he could take another step forward, but I'm not interested in ranking him that way. So, you know, I was kind of split when I was making out these tiers. Does Eloy Jimenez belong in the near elite with the George Springers? Does he belong in this tier here with JD Martinez and Brian Reynolds? And ultimately I decided the latter. Nick Castellanos, yes. If we were assessing him on last year's numbers, if we were assessing him as if he's still going to be with the Reds, then he would be a tier higher for sure. He hit 309 with a 34 home runs and 939 OPS. I mean, he was a legitimate stud last year. But he's a free agent. And the home away splits 359 with an 1109 OPS at home last year versus 260 with a 772 OPS on the road. And of course, we've seen over the course of his career, I mean, the whole case for him being a breakout last year was that he was playing in a much smaller park than he was used to in Detroit. So it really just depends where he signs. I think the most likely scenario is I'm going to keep him here in the next best things, expecting him to regress a little more to his Detroit numbers, where he's more of a 25 homer guy than a 35 homer guy. But if he does wind up in another hitter's paradise, then I could move him back up a tier for sure.
Yeah, I could see the Phillies maybe pushing him into that previous tier as well. It's a good park to hit in. I think a very solid lineup. Obviously, if Castellanos is a part of it, that enhances just how good they can be. So, yeah, the Phillies would make a lot of sense. Miami, no, please no. Let Michael Conforto or someone else sign with the Miami Marlins. Tyler O'Neill is part of this tier, Scott, and he is a freak athlete. When you look at the StatCast numbers, he is in the top 5 percentile in terms of sprint speed, in terms of max exit velocity, so power and speed, there is no doubt about it when it comes to Tyler O'Neill. But like Cedric Mullins, I just don't really like the price on Tyler O'Neill. He's going at pick ADP 54 right now, and he's dealt with some injuries, and obviously the strikeout rate is massive, Scott. I mean, we're talking over 30%. So he impacts the ball very hard. Maybe he could just continue to overcome that strikeout rate, but all of those things that I'm considering, injuries and that strikeout rate, I am not going to be using a fifth-round pick on Tyler O'Neill.
Well, you can understand why people are. I mean, if you just project his numbers out last year over, let's see, he played 138 games, you just project him over 150, you know, he's closing in on a 40-20 season with batting average.
I get why people want to draft him based on what he did last year. And, you know, he's had some prospect status. He finally put it together.
And he saved his best for last, hit over 300 each of the last 2 months, had 13 home runs in September with 5 steals. Definitely left a good taste in everybody's mouth. And because he impacts the ball so hard, you know, I really want to believe it's legit. But yeah, that price tag is really high and pretty much already presumes it's legit, right? Doesn't bake in much downside at all. And throughout my career as a fantasy analyst, I've had a lot of success just betting against the guy who struck out a ton the year before. Doesn't always work out. Obviously, it didn't work out last year with my Teoscar Hernandez pick, although that's because he stopped striking out so much, right? He stopped doing the thing that made him so concerning. So, you know, there have certainly more in recent years. It really began with like Aaron Judge. These 30% strikeout guys have not, they've been able to find more consistent success at the major league level. Not universally, but there have been. If they impact the ball hard enough, that is what allows them to overcome that strikeout rate. And Tyler O'Neill would seem to fit into that category, but it's only 1 year of seeing him do that. And that obviously raises some skepticism. So I tier him here with, you know, Nick Castellanos, Eloy Jimenez, Brian Reynolds, you know, some pretty high-end outfielders, but realistically, he's probably not going to be someone I draft from this tier because he'll be among the earlier players drafted from this tier. That's generally not how I approach the tiers.
All right, Scott, a popular question that we will receive all offseason is what to do with Cody Bellinger and Christian Yelich. Both guys basically imploded last season, dealt with injuries. Obviously, Bellinger, I think it was like a calf injury early on, but he was also coming back from the shoulder surgery. And now Christian Yelich, for a couple of years now, has been dealing with this back injury, a lingering back issue for him. And a couple of years ago, he fractured his kneecap. He hasn't blamed anything on that, but it wouldn't surprise me if maybe that's part of the issue as well. I mean, sounds pretty bad. So where you at, Scotty? Cody Bellinger versus Christian Yelich.
I prefer Bellinger because I see a clearer path to him regaining what he lost. I mean, he's 4 years younger, first of all. And between the shoulder surgery and some ill-advised mechanical changes, you could understand how he just completely messed himself up. When Yelich, it's harder to figure out what's going on with him or if he'll even have time to get back on track. I kind of want to just put these guys in their own tier, right? Because they're so they're so volatile. They're so boom or bust. They could theoretically compete for the MVP this year. I mean, they both had multiple years where they've put together that kind of stat line. But it's been a couple years since we've seen them do anything like that. So I stuck them on the end here. You know, I think that's me being intellectually honest. I think if it came down to it, and, you know, particularly if you're looking at the back end of this tier with Giancarlo Stanton, Mitch Haniger, Chris Bryant, although he's likely to be drafted as a third baseman. If you got that whole group there, then I'd be willing to wait another round and just, you know, if I was looking at outfield, I'd be willing to wait another round, and whoever came back to me, even if it was Bellinger and Yelich, I'd be okay with it. But obviously I have more comfort in a Chris Bryant or even a Mitch Haniger than I do in Bellinger or Yelich. It's just also the trade-off of how comfortable you are versus what is the upside. The upside for Bryant is pretty middling at this point. For Bellinger and Yelich, I still think there's more.
Yeah, I feel like this is what fantasy is all about, right, Scott? I mean, Bellinger and Yelich going around pick 100, isn't that where you want to take that shot? You want to take that upside swing? You know, we're not in the early rounds where you're still building your base and maybe you want to play things a little bit safer. We're at the point in the draft where you want to take that shot. And it wouldn't, I don't think it would really surprise anyone if Bellinger or Yelich, or both of them, bounce back to give us first round value, second round value, something like that. So I think this is exactly the point in the draft where you want to take that shot. And I agree with you. I am more willing to take that shot with Cody Bellinger. I am on record, Scott. I want to be the Cody Bellinger guy this year. So last year, he led my bust article completely off of him with the shoulder surgery. I think another offseason, further removed from that surgery. Scott Boras, I know he's an agent for Bellinger. This is what he's supposed to do, but he's already talked about how he thinks Bellinger is going to be ready to go for spring, 100% healthy, and that he's going to bounce back. So, yeah, I put some weight on that, and I'm feeling really good about the price tag with Bellinger. This is someone I think perfectly where you want to take an upside shot in your draft. So, yes, let's do it. You're right. Cody Bellinger over Christian Yelich. I'll let you keep your shirt. That's your prize. The email of the day, Scott, before we hit the break. This one's from Matthew. Since you are covering tiers, can you please discuss how you use tiers when drafting at the end of a snake draft? Are they even useful considering you can't count on a player being available two rounds later? So I should have asked you this when we started talking about the tiers, Scott. Are the players within your tier, are they in the order of the way that they are ranked in your rankings?
In the order that I rank them, yeah.
Oh, all right. So yeah, I think when you get to the end of a draft, you probably just take whoever's ranked highest in the tier, right?
Well, no, I think what he's asking is, you know, the idea behind using tiers is you target the position that's closest to depletion of the tier, the currently active tier, right?
Fair.
So that you're getting maximum value with every pick. But if you're having to wait 20 plus picks in between your picks, how much can you really anticipate who's going to be taken next?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say that's why I hate picking on the ends. It really makes it hard to apply the tiers approach because it's a lot of forecasting that you don't have to do if you're picking right in the middle. That's my preferred spot, smack dab in the middle of the round, so that you're never having to wait that long in between picks. So I know most people prefer to pick on the ends, but because this is the approach I tend to use in drafts, it's not ideal. It's not ideal. So I don't have a great answer for you. I just do the best I can. And, you know, maybe if you're talking about an infield position where, you know, outfield's different. Outfield's a little different, obviously, because people draft multiple outfielders. But if you're talking about an infield position where everybody drafts more or less just one of at each of those spots, you know, maybe instead of thinking two is enough to wait at the position, I'll say three or four. If there's three or four still left in the active tier, I'll wait. But it kind of just depends. You know, I guess the real answer is I just don't adhere to the tiers as strictly as I would if I was picking in the middle. And it's burned me a few times. It's burned me a few times both directions, not adhering to them as closely as I normally would, or adhering to them too closely and missing out on this huge run and having to settle for, you know, D.D. Gregorius at shortstop or something. So if you get a chance to pick your draft spot, try not to pick near an end if this is the approach you want to use.
Oh, I think I misunderstood the question. I think I was thinking about it like just towards the end of your draft, like the later rounds of your draft, but they're asking about like if your draft positioning. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So that makes sense. All right. Cause all right. That, yeah. I was about to say something completely different about drafting later on.
Were you even listening to my answer, Frank?
Yes, I was. I was thinking about how I was going to respond to it, but listen to Scott. Don't listen to me. Before we hit the break, our friends at Fantasy Football Today are up for the Best Social Media Award. It'll take you less than 10 seconds. I've already voted for them. It took me like 5 seconds. So vote for our friends. Fantasy Football Today. Hit the link that is in the podcast or YouTube description. And if FFT wins, we will give away some Fantasy Baseball Today hoodies for free. Vote now and win an FBT hoodie. And the link is in the podcast and the YouTube description. So again, please help out our good friends there. Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, Chris, all the great guys over at Fantasy Football Today. Just a heads up that our podcast schedule next week, you will have a podcast Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, and Thursday morning. And one final reminder that you can watch all of our podcasts on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. So if you like to take things in more visually rather than listening, then you can do that at our YouTube channel. Just subscribe and tap the notification bell so you get notified every time we drop a video or we go live on the channel. When we return, we are going to talk about the fallback options here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
The national sales event is on at your Toyota dealer, making now the perfect time to get a great deal on a dependable new Toyota truck. Like a rugged half-ton Tundra, workhorse by nature, powerhouse by design, the Tundra combines raw capability with premium comfort and advanced tech to fuel your wildest adventures. And with the available iForce Max hybrid powertrain, you can take electrifying horsepower farther than ever before. Or check out the fully redesigned Tacoma, delivering trail-dominating power and captivating style. The new Tacoma was born to make your off-roading dreams come true. And with new available tech, this legendary truck is getting even better. And when you buy a Toyota truck, you buy Toyota dependability, meaning your truck will hold its value long into the future. So visit your local Toyota dealer and check out amazing national sales event deals when you visit buyatoyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, let's jump back into the outfield tier, Scotty, and the fallback options. They range from picks 110 to 169. That is rounds 10 through 15, and it includes Austin Meadows, Tommy Edman, Chris Taylor, Robbie Grossman, Hunter Renfro, Alex Verdugo, Michael Brantley, Lourdes Gurriel, Ryan Mountcastle, Joey Gallo, and Jared Kelnick. Edman, Gurriel, Mountcastle, and Gallo are a tier lower in points. Brantley and Verdugo are a tier lower in roto. I understand if you're listening to this.
Got all that?
Yeah, it might be confusing to listen along. So I would say pull up the article so you can follow along with the tiers. And let's just talk about a few of these players, Scott. How much do you trust let's go with the breakout seasons of Robbie Grossman and Hunter Renfro? Grossman, some power, some speed. Renfro broke out in the power department, over 30 home runs. He did that with Boston last year, has now been relocated to the Milwaukee Brewers, which is still a pretty good ballpark to hit in. So how much do you trust these breakout seasons?
What's the name of the Brewers Park now? I should know this by now.
Oh, it's
called it Miller Park for so long.
American Family Field, I believe it is.
Yeah, okay. It's too close to Great American Ballpark, but that's fine. American Family Field.
Yes, that is what it's called.
Very wholesome, that name. I mean, it's one of the best hitters' parks. It's been kind of a kingmaker in fantasy in recent years. And I don't know how much more into a King Renfro needs to be made. But I think there's a chance he takes even another small step forward this year. You know, he hit the majority of his home runs last year on the road, so it's not like he was just, you know, relying on the green monster out there at Fenway Park. So I do trust his breakout pretty well. He lowered his strikeout rate himself to around 22%. Much better strikeout rate than I ever thought we'd see from somebody like him, who's, you know, pretty much just a power bat and nothing else. But could he be like a poor man's Mitch Haniger? I think he could. I think he could. I don't think he has an enormously high ceiling. I couldn't see him ranking among the near elite next year. But that's kind of this whole tier. It's either guys with, well, first of all, none of the guys have really early round upside, I don't feel like. And a lot of the guys have serious question marks. Not at all confident that any of these guys are somebody you're going to draft and hold on to for the full season. But among them, Renfroe is probably one of the ones I'm more confident in. Grossman, you know, he's already in his mid-30s and just got a chance to be a full-time player and make good on it, but with low batting average, still, you're getting 20-20 production. You know, at least that's what you got from last year, and the possibility of that happening again at his price tag is very alluring. He's always had good on-base skills, even when he was a part-time player with other teams. So that should keep him in the lineup. And, you know, even if he's not providing as much power as he did last year. So I think there's a chance he comes close to last year's numbers. And I think where he's getting drafted on average is a perfectly reasonable price weighing all the pros and cons there.
Yeah, even if he takes a little step back, the Seamer projections have Robbie Grossman for 17 homers, 15 steals, same batting average, 239. That's still valuable as a third, probably better as like a fourth outfielder if you're playing in a roto league. He does see an uptick in value if your category is roto league plays with OBP. He had a 14.6% walk rate. So nice little value piece there from Robbie Grossman. Another name in here, Scott, that I find interesting and I actually wrote up in my breakouts 1.0 is Jared Kelnick. So just really kind of trusting the prospect pedigree here. We know the story from last year. He got called up. He was absolutely awful. He got sent back down, came back up for the second half of the season, struggled for most of it, and then turned it on in September. The question is, how much stock do we actually want to put in that? Because it was only 28 games, but he hit 238, seven homers, three steals. Strikeout rate was down to 25% during that time, and he had an 849 OPS. So, I mean, that sounds a lot like the player we were hoping to get from Kelnick, you know, hoping for a better batting average, but some power, speed, strong OPS. How much weight do you put on that strong September for Jared Kelnick?
Look, do I think he's just going to be who he was in September? That's just the expected baseline for him going forward? No, I don't think it's that straightforward, but it does go a long way to keeping my expectations relatively high. You know, it's salvaged his spot in my rankings, basically. He might be buried to the same degree Joe Adell is. I mean, I have Joe Adell a tier lower than Jared Kelnick. Even, you know, there were similarly rated prospects, but Jared Kelnick has shown, well, he hasn't failed quite as miserably as Joe Adell has when you take into account the 2020 numbers as well. And also he had that big September where he looked like he might be getting to figure it out. So, yeah, I mean, I take back what I said a minute ago where nobody in this tier has early round upside. I think Jared Kelnick does. But how likely is he to make good on it this upcoming year after very uneven performance as a rookie? I don't think it's particularly good, but you do have to factor it into your assessment of him that, okay, there is this 90th percentile outcome or whatever, where he puts up Kyle Tucker like numbers, you know?
Yeah.
And so that might make him a pretty attractive target here.
Yeah, I agree. Exactly what I said about Bellinger and Yelich. Obviously those guys are much, much more proven than Jared Kelnick, but this is the point in the draft where you want to take a shot on that upside. And admittedly, I wish the ADP was a little bit lower for Jared Kelnick. It's 122.7, but you're talking about the 10-11 turn in a 12-team league. Yeah, I mean, if you're getting him as your third outfielder, yeah, obviously I hope you have some pretty safe options before him, but it seems like a pretty good point in the draft to take a shot on some upside with Jared Kelnick. Let's move on to the last resorts tier. And this is a massive range of 20 players spanning picks 139 in ADP to 286. You mentioned Joe Adell while talking about Jared Kelnick. Scott, I wanted to ask you about Adell and Alex Kirilloff, who kind of look like post-hype sleepers, right? Like, we don't know what we're going to get from either player. Kirilloff is coming back from wrist surgery, and Joe Adell to this point has been mostly underwhelming. Though I like that the strikeout rate was down when he got called back up last year. What do you think about Kirilloff and Adell potentially as post-hype sleepers in this range?
Yep. I think both of them fit the bill. I don't think either of them has gotten nearly enough opportunities in the majors yet for us to have a verdict on who they're going to be. They're both still very young, obviously. And, you know, for a while last year, remember, Alex Kirilloff was playing through that wrist injury. And prior to it, and it was a very small sample. The whole season was a very small sample, but particularly if you're dividing it up pre-injury, post-injury, his batted ball numbers were looking elite. He got off to a slow start statistically, but the underlying numbers suggested he had, you know, the way he was impacting ball was the ball was like that of a stud. So I wish we could have seen the full season play out. I wish he hadn't hurt the wrist again, but now that it's been operated on, you know, hopefully it's behind him and he can hit the ground running. And I am just as high on him this year, I think, as I was last year, provided we don't hear of any setback or anything with the wrist. Adell, you know, he wasn't great after returning from the minors last year, but in the 35 games he played, he struck out 22.9% of the time, which is actually a big improvement even from what he did at AAA, striking out 29.2% of the time prior to his call-up.
Yeah, no.
I don't know that he's only going to be a 20% strikeout guy. I kind of doubt that. But like, I was just comforted to see he wasn't eaten alive by major league pitching again. Remember in 2020 after he got called up, clearly rushed. He struck out over 40% of the time. It was just a total disaster. So I'm hopeful that there was some actual progress made for Adell. And if there was, then the tools are pretty tantalizing. He's going to provide that speed element that Kirilloff won't.
Akil Baddoo, last one I wanted to mention, pretty intrigued by his skill set, some power, some speed, and he was striking out a ton early last year, made some adjustments, really strong in terms of the walk rate, and he lowered that strikeout rate. And I don't know if you saw this video that's been picture that's been circulating, Scott, of Akil Baddoo and his offseason workouts. The guy is jacked up. He's jacked, Scott. So just search Akil Baddoo, click on the photos on Twitter, and it'll be one of the first ones you see. Not that you want to draft him just based on that, but yeah, I'm pretty intrigued by the skill set.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by it too. And I was tempted. I haven't actually written the column yet, but I have the players picked out for breakouts 1.0. And I was tempted to include him in it, but he was so bad against left-handers. Yep. Granted, he was a rookie, but like they weren't giving him full-time at-bats against left-handers already, and I don't think he earned more time against left-handed pitchers. And the whole performance was just so uneven. Strikeouts were kind of high. The walks were, you know, especially compared to what he was doing in the minors. I expected more from the walks for him. I'm not confident, unless his workouts have are going to impact his power production. Maybe they could, but, you know, that's not always how it plays out. Muscles don't always equate to more home runs. I'm not sure he has a particularly high power ceiling. Not saying he couldn't hit 20 home runs potentially, but I don't think it's going to be an easy 20 home runs for him. So, you know, between the playing time concerns and the strikeout concerns and the power concerns, how high is the ceiling really? I think he belongs in this tier. I don't think he belongs in the same tier as Robbie Grossman. I think Robbie Grossman is a better bet for a 2020 season than Akil Baddoo.
All right. Yeah, I don't love the splits either. Struggled big time against lefty, so we'll see if he can make adjustments there. But yeah, intriguing is one Akil Baddoo. Let's move on to the deep leaguers. There are 19 names in this tier, and two that stood out to me, Scotty, are two that are in your Sleepers 1.0 article. That is Connor Joe, who we've talked about quite a bit this offseason, and Rafael Ortega, who got an opportunity to play with the Chicago Cubs, much like his teammate Frank Schwindel. He's kind of just been lurking around the majors, the minors, has this journeyman feel, and was pretty good. Some power, some speed, decent OBP. Tell us more about Connor Joe and Rafael Ortega.
So Connor Joe is in my sleepers 1.0, Rafael Ortega. Yeah, I guess you mentioned that, right? Yeah. So they're even a tier lower here, but that's partly because you don't have to pay more to get them than this. Like, they're barely being drafted in 12 team leagues. They might not even be drafted. And like, Connor Joe is the one I'm most excited about because he had taken over as the Rockies leadoff hitter last August and was delivering big number. His point per game average, I think, was like Mitch Haniger's in that role. And, you know, obviously all the advantages of Coors Field, great OBP skills, which you love to see from a leadoff hitter, particularly in an environment where runs are easy to come by like they are at Coors Field. I think he could be a true must-start player in fantasy, but we need some assurances about the playing time there. Just because the Rockies were willing to give it to him last August doesn't mean they will to begin the season. And I'm not sure they're going to say much about it, honestly, prior to the season. So I don't know how much his draft stock is going to improve, but he's definitely somebody I like to target in the late rounds. Rafael Ortega, I think, has some pretty clear platoon concerns, like I said, for Akil Baddoo. But he's a better contact hitter than Baddoo. I think the power production is similar. I think the speed production maybe give a slight edge to Baddoo there. But, I think Ortega has an outside shot at being a 2020 guy as well. And at least against right-handers, he should be the leadoff man for the Cubs.
Let's wrap up with a few email questions here, Scotty. This one's from Alexander Chaco. As injuries mount year by year, it seems to me multi-position eligibility is the next new desirable factor. Given this, I need help selecting two keepers in my 15-team 5x5 Roto League. 22 slots with 8 pitchers, but only one IL slot. 3 keepers, moving up 3 rounds per year. But one, Tucker, round 17 is a no-brainer. So he's keeping Kyle Tucker. For my two other spots, I am torn between the following: single-position players versus multi-position guys. Dylan Carlson. These are the outfield-only players. Dylan Carlson in round 12, Kelnick in round 14, Jesse Winker round 16, Colton Wong round 18, and then these are the multi-position players. Ryan Mountcastle in round 9, Alex Kirilloff in round 20, Brendan Rodgers in round 22. We need two of those, Scotty.
Only two. Okay. I would keep...
I think I know who you're going to say.
Yeah, moving up 3 rounds per year. Okay, but it's only 3 keepers. So I don't know that you need to focus that much on the long term at all here. So I'm probably saying no to Kelnick as a result of that, and going with Jesse Winker in round 16 and Brendan Rodgers in round 22.
And that's exactly what I would have predicted. This next one's from Tyler Simmons. Loving all the off-season content. I was eliminated in football very early, so I've been with you guys since about mid-October. Awesome.
Yes.
We appreciate it, Tyler.
Yes. Anyway. You can listen to us either way.
You try and balance both. I mean, I do it. Scott kind of does it. Anyway, 12-team keeper league. Keep 5 for 3 years max. Head-to-head points. Snake draft. Who do you like better as a final keeper? Justin Verlander in the 26th round, Alek Manoah in the 26th round, or Byron Buxton in the 11th? I'm already keeping Devers, Corey Seager, Logan Webb, and Fastball Freddy. Although, Fastball no more. Throws that slider quite a bit.
I mean, they're all good keepers. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say whether it's roto or points, does he? Oh, head-to-head points. Oh, yeah. Okay. Head-to-head points.
I think we have to take one of the pitchers. Do you take the
I was leaning Buxton until he said head-to-head points.
Do you take the old wily veteran, Scott, or do you go with the young buck, Alek Manoah?
Keep 5 for 3 years max. Does this price stay locked in for those 3 years?
Doesn't mention it. For 3 years max, I think I got to go with Manoah Scott with the 3 years. I don't know if Verlander's going to pitch for 3 years. I don't know if he's going to make it through 1 year, even though I do like Verlander, but
yeah,
give me Manoah around 26.
I'm really confident in the impact Verlander's going to make this year. I think I take Verlander.
All right. Scotty on Verlander. I am on Alec Manoah. This last one's from Hugh. I am in a head-to-head points league. We get to keep five guys. Also traded for the first overall pick, which will be Juan Soto. I had him for 3 years and had to put him back in the pool, so I gave up Corbin Burns for the first overall pick to get Juan Soto. Thoughts on that move? All right. So that's first, Scott. Giving up Corbin Burns to get Juan Soto first overall. Makes sense, right?
I would... Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. All right, so the keepers for Hugh are Bryce Harper, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddie Freeman. Then I need to keep two of the following. Yordan Alvarez, Alex Bregman, Francisco Lindor. Alvarez could round out my outfield. Bregman worries me, but third base is so shallow. Lindor is in a deep position, so I am stuck. Two of those names, Scotty.
Alvarez and Bregman. But you know I'm the low guy on Lindor. And yeah, you don't already have a shortstop, I guess, but you mentioned in here it's a deep position. I think you'll be okay finding another shortstop.
Yeah. As much as I like Lindor, I think it comes down to if other people in your league are keeping third baseman, which makes it even harder to get a usable third baseman in your draft, then I think I'm all right going with Bregman, especially, I mean, he's so good in head-to-head points leagues as well. So definitely Yordan Alvarez. I think it's close between Bregman and Lindor. Maybe look at some other rosters. In a vacuum, I would still take Lindor, though, but it is close. We're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We will be back again on Tuesday morning. Bye-bye.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!